Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers, issues, etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
If we're going to have a serious debate on when a fetus becomes a human being, to bring the race element in, like because of someone's race, they should be therefore automatically on one side, I think is divisive.
Scientifically, biologically, that child in the womb at the moment of conception is a human being.
Our troops come from every corner of this country. They're black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American. They are Christian and Hindu, Jewish and Muslim. And yes, we know that some of them are gay.
You must now give yourself to Christ. That's law. And the law cannot produce spiritually good works.
I'm Daniel Berquist. I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm a Macintosh software engineer. And I love Issues Etc.
People probably have one of two reactions when they hear about the unrest in Cairo and Egypt, that nation's capital, over a president who probably everyone agrees has stayed far too long. They say, how could this matter to us? Or they're concerned that we don't know why it's happening. Can we explain the unrest, at least in part, in Egypt, as well as the unrest in many countries where a common thread does seem to be radical Islam? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch joins us for the first few minutes of this hour, live this Wednesday, February the 2nd, to talk about the unrest in Egypt and elsewhere on the globe and its relationship to radical Islam. A little bit later, Chris Roseborough will be our guest. There's a new fitness program being launched at Rick Warren's church, Saddleback, called the Daniel Plan. It's part of his Decade of Destiny. We'll see how the two things fit together. And with purpose-driven preaching, those are Rick's terms. Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. You can join us as well, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or leave your thoughts on the Daniel Plan at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Robert, welcome back.
Todd, always happy to be here. Thanks.
How should we best understand the unrest in Egypt's capital right now?
Well, it's a legitimate and understandable reaction to the repressive nature of the Mubarak regime. At the same time, there's a significant Islamic supremacist element to it because the Muslim Brotherhood is the largest opposition group in Egypt. They're a pro-Sharia organization that wants to institute Islamic law in Egypt and around the world. And so they are doing their best while taking kind of a muted role in the protests themselves. They are positioning themselves to be the big player in a post-Mubarak Egypt.
What has the Mubarak Egypt been like? How would you characterize it, especially vis-a-vis Islam?
Well, it's an Arab republic. You know, it is officially the Arab Republic of Egypt. It's one of the last bastions of the Arab nationalist ideology that used to be the dominant ideology in the Middle East. Saddam Hussein, Hafez Assad, and his son Bashir, who is still in power in Syria, the King Abdullah, and before him King Hussein in Jordan, Nasser, and then Sadat, and now Mubarak in Egypt, they were all Arab nationalists, and they were ruling relatively secular states in which Islam did not have the full implementation of Islamic law that people like groups like the Muslim Brotherhood would like to see there. It was a mixture of Western laws, a great deal more in terms of equality of rights for women and non-Muslims than Islamic supremacists would like to see. And so Arab nationalism was once the, you know, in the 1950s, 1960s, the dominant ideology in that area, but now it's very much on the wane. All of the Arab nationalist rulers are either gone or going. Mubarak is one of the last. And the up-and-coming ideology, political ideology, is a religious one as well. It is Islam and Islamic law, and that's what the Muslim Brotherhood represents.
So what would you realistically expect to happen after Mubarak is gone in Egypt?
I think that there'll probably be something playing out very much like what happened in Iran in 1979, that the authoritarian repressive ruler is overthrown, a democratic coalition of various groups of leftists and Islamists and such takes power, and that fairly soon the Islamic supremacists are able to assert themselves because of the broad popular support that they enjoy and push the other groups out of the coalition and establish an Islamic Republic.
What do you think the poor economic conditions that the average Egyptian lives with, how do you think that contributes, or how do you think radical Islam is able to capitalize on that?
They make a very direct appeal in that regard, and they say very simply that people are in poverty because Islam brings prosperity. One of the things in the call to prayer, we should remember the prayer that the muezzin says from the minaret five times a day when he climbs up and he calls the people in the area to prayer, and of course in Egypt this is sounded over loudspeakers. It says, come to prayer, come to success. And in Islam, earthly success and prosperity is very much tied to one's the rigor of one's observance and the obedience one has to Islam. And so it's very easy for Islamic supremacist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood to portray any kind of economic trouble in the society to a lack of loyalty to Islam, and to say that, see, if we were just more faithful and more obedient to Allah, then none of this would be happening.
How do you evaluate our State Department's and Barack Obama's administration's response to what's going on in Egypt right now?
Well, the Obama administration has given the green light to a role for the Muslim Brotherhood in the new government in Egypt, and this does not bode well for the United States, even though it's something that meets with the president's approval. I think that it's going to blow up in his face, because the Brotherhood is not going to change its anti-American stance. And ultimately, we have to remember that the Brotherhood is an international organization, not just an Egyptian one, and is dedicated, according to a captured internal document, to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within. That's not something that's going to change because Barack Obama is adopting a warm stance toward the group.
If I remember correctly, our president made a rather famous speech in Cairo some time back. Do you think there's any relationship between the content of that speech and what we're seeing unfold in Egypt right now?
Well, the president, remember, when he made that speech, he made sure to specifically invite members of the Muslim Brotherhood to attend the speech in Cairo. And that was really kind of a wild thing for him to have done, because officially the Muslim Brotherhood is outlawed in Egypt. And so he was asking for members of an outlaw organization to be allowed to attend a speech by the President of the United States. And of course they were. It was really a remarkable indirect display of approval for the group itself, and a recognition of their importance in Egyptian society. And so certainly I think that the Brotherhood had every reason to be encouraged by that incident and to think that the president would not mount any kind of significant resistance to their attempts to gain power in Egypt. And, of course, the recent events are bearing that out.
Before we let you go, Robert, the New York Times has carried a story about a new Pew Research survey that claims that reports that Europe will eventually become a majority Muslim region are unfounded. What are your thoughts on the story and its research?
Well, you know, I think that people are very much focused on the numbers, but they don't realize that there are numerous historical precedents for an organized, energized, ideologically charged vanguard being able to exert its will over a majority. The Bolshevik Revolution in Russia is, I think, the most significant case in point. The Bolsheviks were never a majority in Russia. They never won an election. They never had the support of the majority of the people, but they were the most ruthless, they were the most focused, they were the most determined, and they carried the day. And unfortunately, there are Islamic groups in Europe that have just that kind of focus.
There was also a gruesome video, one apparently of several, of a couple stoned in Afghanistan. What's your reaction to that? What are we watching there when we see people stoned in Afghanistan?
Well, we're watching Islamic law play itself out. Islamic law mandates stoning for adulterers. And so when we see videos like that, we have to remember that is Sharia. That is Islamic law. That is the Islamic law that the Muslim Brotherhood wants to impose on Egypt. and wants to export to the rest of the world, including the United States. It is something that is directly in contradiction to numerous freedoms and American principles that are guaranteed by our Constitution and are intrinsic to our way of life.
Finally, your thoughts on the fight for power in Tunisia?
It's the same thing playing out there, really. Tunisia was the second most secular Islamic, second most secular majority Muslim country, I should say, after Turkey. And the Ben Ali regime is now gone. That was the guarantor of Tunisian secularism. Meanwhile, Rashid Ghannouchi, who was the leader of the leading Islamist party in Tunisia, has come back to the country. And there have been rallies and demonstrations with Tunisian Islamists demanding demanding the repeal of laws that restrict women wearing the headscarf and men wearing beards and various other aspects of Islamic law for personal observance. And so I think that we're also going to see a strong push for Islamic rule in Tunisia as well, although I don't think that the Tunisian Islamic supremacists are as well-positioned as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt is to take power.
So if there's a common thread in all these stories, with 30 seconds, what would you say it is?
That the proponents of political Islam see their chance to transform the Middle East and the world and to establish Islamic regimes in numerous states, and they are seizing that opportunity.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch. He's author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can purchase The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Robert, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
When we come back, we'll spend the remainder of today's program with Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith. Rick Warren has pledged to lose 90 pounds in a 52-week fitness program called the Daniel Plan that was developed by the famous Dr. Oz and has recently been launched as part of the Decade of Destiny at Saddleback Church and perhaps a church near you. We'll be right back. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2011 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
The listeners to Issues Etc. already have had contact through the program with lecturers who will be in Strasbourg this next summer. Craig Parton, myself, Dr. Minuge, Angus Minuge, Adam Francisco, and these lecturers are people who have defended the faith, who know how to defend the faith, and who are marvelous communicators. And so, if a listener to this program wants to learn how to present the case for Christianity in a secular situation, the 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with us would be an absolutely ideal way to achieve this.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 5th through the 16th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu.